on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And you're very welcome to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara. Thank you very much to Betta and the team for keeping us company over the course of the last couple of hours. We've got 57 minutes of good sporting chat to come your way this Monday evening. Much to reflect upon, including those two brilliant All-Ireland hurling semi-finals across the weekend. We're going to look ahead to some of what we hope will be the games that might still ignite Euro 2024 ahead of the semi-finals getting underway tomorrow. Ireland beaten by South Africa in their opening summer test on Saturday. It would appear that it's come at the cost of a couple of very significant injuries. We'll chat to Bernard Jackman about that later in the programme. And in just a moment, we will reflect and react to news within the past maybe hour and a half or so that Mickey Hart has stood down as manager of the Derry Footballers. 51552 is your number for the texts, and you can find us across social media at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
And here to keep me honest over the course of the next hour is Alan Cawley. How are you?
I'm good, Damien. How are you?
I'm good. I wasn't in Croke Park yesterday. I listened on the radio, but I was in Croke Park on Saturday, and it was just like you kind of there going, I do this for a living. How did I get away with this? Brilliant weekend.
I saw you in Croke Park on Saturday.
I was working hard, wasn't I? I was.
You were flat out. Thanks. Yes. I was working hard myself.
Yeah.
I'm the same, Damien. My weekend was completely dominated by hurling because I'm a massive hurling fan, and I think everybody should be, especially based off what we witnessed over the weekend. It was absolutely phenomenal. Saturday's second half was unreal. A pleasure to be there. But yesterday's match, and they're just serving up epic after epic. It's unbelievable.
Limerick have been brilliant champions. Mm. And I've been lucky enough that I've been there for all of their All-Ireland final wins on All-Ireland final day, and I've been there for a couple of the Munster finals, and to a man, they're brilliant to deal with, and you never have any hassle with them. And like, listen, you ask questions occasionally that they might not agree with, and you might have it out and it's forgotten about. They have been phenomenal champions for the game, but there comes a point at which you need new teams to break through. And like, can you imagine what it's going to be like on the 21st of July, Clare against Cork, and two teams who by their own standards will feel it has been a drought of All-Ireland titles?
Yeah, I already have the feelers out for the tickets, and I'm hoping someone will look after me, Damien. But you're right about Limerick, they have been great champions, and I even think yesterday they still were great champions because the way they handled themselves afterwards, they hung around, the both teams stayed on the pitch, clapped off their fans, took the defeat on the chin. John Kiely, as ever, spoke so brilliantly after the match, as he has done in many successes. So I think overall the whole weekend was just phenomenal, and as you say, two new counties battling it out now, obviously. And when you think of the seasons that they've had, obviously the near misses with Clare, Brian Lowe, and I looked down at him on Saturday and he was the calmest man in the stadium when the final whistle was blown, and I thought it was a lovely moment because I've only ever heard good things about Brian Lowe, and they have suffered some near misses, and for them to get over the line in a game where obviously they were being questioned, they were down 5 points at half time, for them to come through, it's going to be a hell of a day now on the 21st.
Yeah, at half time, I'll be very honest with you, I was trying to think in my head, how do I formulate a question about you've been here 5 years and how do you pick yourself up to go for this again? So it's been a brilliant championship. We've got John Milan and Shane McGrath, who you've been sparring with on Mondays over the last couple of weeks. So we'll put the world right on that in a couple of minutes' time. Can I ask you, we're going to reflect on Mickey Hart parting company with Derry. It was a lot of people were very surprised that this legendary Tyrone figure would go in to manage their great rivals. Mm. How you've been in dressing rooms over the years, how difficult can it be for a manager to win over a dressing room if there's some kind of a perception about them beforehand, even if it's this fella's from the other side of the fence and they're our greatest rival or someone, you know?
Yeah,
I
think it can be very difficult, Damien, if there's even one or two kind of dissenting voices. But from what I'm seeing from the outside, it was a pack of dissenting voices that never really wanted him. And if you're not wanted or welcomed into a place from day one, it's very, very hard. And I think that's what we've seen throughout the season. And it was almost as if there was plenty of people waiting in the long grass after the defeats, because obviously things had started off quite well and the league campaign was great. But as soon as things started to turn and results didn't go their way, it can be very difficult. And I think that's what he probably realised himself. And when you think of the good job that he was doing at Louth, and the grass isn't always greener on the other side, he probably thought this is a real opportunity to maybe win an All-Ireland with Derry because they had a better team than Louth. But after the season Louth have had and Ger Brennan, they're on the up, whereas now where does Mickey Hart go from here?
Well, let's ponder that now in just a minute. Let's get some reaction on this story. We're going to go to Cathal O'Kane, who writes for the Irish News, who was amongst those who broke the story earlier this afternoon. Cathal, thanks very much for joining us on the programme.
No bother, Damon. How are you?
Not too bad at all. I think anyone who saw Mickey Hart's interview after the Kerry game, particularly his interview with GAA Go, or read those quotes, there's really no surprise. Maybe the surprise in all of this is that it has happened so quickly.
Yeah, you're probably right there. No surprise in the actual announcement, no surprise in the fact that he has gone. But I would say maybe not a huge surprise from a Derry perspective in the timing of it as well, because I mean, last summer when they were looking to get a replacement in after Rory Gallagher left, they left whatever 10, 11 weeks of a gap. And then by the time they got through the process, they kind of missed the window on a lot of prospective options, and it left them, you know, really in the position that they were in the position that they left themselves in last summer. Mickey Hart was the best possible solution that Derry could have got at that time. It just hasn't worked out at all, and it is no surprise now at this stage that everybody has kind of agreed to just call time on it now at this point.
We might talk in a moment about potential successors, or the most likely successor, because everyone seems to be pointing towards one man in particular. But to understand the complexity of Mickey Hart and the challenge he faced in Derry, one needs to understand the extent of the rivalry that exists between Tyrone and Derry. And is it fair to say that this was almost doomed for failure from the start, because it was so difficult for passionate Derry fans to accept a Tyrone man, or not least the man who had led Tyrone to such success as the Derry manager?
Yeah, look, there definitely was an element of it was going to be harder for Mickey Hart than possibly anybody else. There is, as you say, that huge rivalry on the Lough Neagh side of the county. On the two counties, there's a big rivalry there between the two. And It left him facing an uphill battle, which he started climbing very quickly, and perhaps that was part of it. You know, he did as he did in Tyrone. He went after the McKenna Cup. They won the McKenna Cup with a very strong team. They went after the league, which was predictable. You know, I mean, I remember saying at the end of January that probably Derry and Dublin would end up being the league final, because Dublin had the depth and Derry had the will to go after it. They were looking a fast start under Mickey. He was looking to kind of stave off any pressure. Also looking to win, because that was, you know, he always went out after McKenna Cups in Tyrone and leagues in Tyrone, so it was nothing unusual. It wasn't just about staving off pressure or anything like that. But there is the sense now that, you know, are they tired? I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily buy that argument, but it is there. That they went out very hard and that the season kind of caved in on them.
But even, like, it just did seem to fall apart in Ulster. And you know, people will point to the Donegal game and the ease with which Donegal got goals against them. But then, you know, to paraphrase famed American politicians, you'll fool me once, but to fool me twice. The fact that they never even changed the style of play, you know, Armagh got handy goals off them, that there was that sense over the course of the championship that there was a very rigid set way that they were going to approach things, and that they never really counted the costs that they had suffered along the way.
Look, absolutely. In some ways, I understand that argument. I think, to flip it on its head, I think in the All-Ireland semi-final last year against Kerry, Derry had really come out of their shell and shown that in a game of that magnitude against an opposition of that level, that they could actually go and play football against them. That it wasn't just a tactical thing. It wasn't just, you know, they weren't entirely reliant on the system. All of those things. And then to have gone backwards from that would have felt like a regression in terms of the tactical. When you actually then delved in to Derry's performances through the year, so much of the focus came on the kickouts and it came on getting ripped apart defensively. But their biggest downfall a lot of the time was in their attacking play. And that was where the real problems actually lay. In that when it came to the summertime, they weren't hurting teams in the way the attacking play had changed completely. It wasn't as structured. It was very, very different. And that's what probably undermined the whole thing, because you know, so if you step off the offensive plan, you're not playing well enough in attack yourself. You're not structured enough to go and win the tight games that you had been winning. But in a shootout as well, you weren't being efficient enough. So the problems maybe weren't particularly visible in some ways, but when you actually drill down into their performances and the statistics of them, that's where they were really struggling.
Where to from here then for Mickey Hart?
Yeah, for Mickey, it's a tough one. I suppose it depends. People were really surprised at the speed at which he joined Louth after leaving Tyrone. I mean, Peter Fitzpatrick has said pretty much, you know, thought I'd take a chance, ring him, not really knowing how that conversation would go, whether Mickey was interested, and he jumped at it and he was straight back into county football. It's been a sobering year for him, I'm sure. It's been a tough couple of months. He's faced a lot of criticism inside Derry, outside Derry, a lot of personal criticism, and I'd say this has probably been the toughest year he's ever had. He's faced a lot, you know, that's very much in a football sense, but he's faced a lot of really, really intense criticism in a really short period of time. And the fact that there was a build-up, you know, if they had bad years in Tyrone, they maybe lost a game or two games and they were out and you could reset. They lost four championship games this summer and it was just a build-up of one after the other, and it got progressively worse, and they staved it off a bit with the Mayo win. But even that wasn't enough to paper over the cracks, and it just became, you know, the performance against Kerry, the way that the game went, it was an inevitable conclusion.
Mm. But it's difficult to see where a job could materialise now. That, listen, he's a proud man, he's an ambitious man. He's not a man I would imagine is going to want his management career to finish like this.
No, I wouldn't imagine that he would. Now, whether there's another top end job in it for him after this is the question, or whether he goes down to the lower reaches and tries to make his way through that. He has said, like, his hunger to be involved in football, his enthusiasm for it and his passion for it hadn't dimmed at all. So look, we don't know. Is that enthusiasm, that passion still there to be involved again, especially quite soon? I mean, I wonder if Peter Fitzpatrick or the like, somebody rang him in 3 weeks' time or a month's time again, would he have the same hunger to get straight back in? I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
And then in terms of the future for Derry, I think a figure who has cast a shadow over the entire setup since the 28th of February, when his disbarment from the GAA was overturned by the DRA, is Rory Gallagher. And you know, to talk to people in Celtic Park the day of the Armagh game, when there were unfounded rumours of player turmoil and everything else, that there's almost been an inevitability about the fact that if the Derry job was to come up, or when the Derry job was to come back, Rory Gallagher is there ready to step in. Is that a strong likelihood?
Yeah, look, I suppose it has been there in the background the whole time, and it is a possibility. I suppose there's a lot that has to happen between now and that being confirmed. But it wouldn't be a surprise to anybody in Derry if that was the road that they went down, because in a footballing sense, the players felt that he was going to win them in All-Ireland. And the players want to win in All-Ireland. Mm. So they're looking at it from a footballing point of view, who's going to win us in All-Ireland? And that is the man that could potentially do it. So there would be a push in certain quarters towards bringing Rory Gallagher back without any shadow of a doubt. The other primary contender, and his name gets brought up every time, it's been for about 15 years, Malachy O'Rourke has been linked to the Derry job and has never fitted the time and has never been right in different things. There were times he didn't want it. And I don't know how well the approach was received or how well the approach was timed last year when they went to Malachy before they went to Mickey. They obviously approached Malachy O'Rourke to take it and he turned them down. Whether that would be an option again or not, I'm not sure.
Okay. Before I let you go, we've obviously the semi-finals this weekend in Croke Park, Armagh against Kerry, Donegal against Galway. Have the printing presses been cleared? The decks are ready for an Ulster splash in a couple of weeks' time when one of the Armagh or Donegal inevitably brings Sam back to Ulster?
it would be a big couple of weeks, all right, up here. I suppose, like, we don't get too many All-Irelands in Ulster. We've never got too many, so they're always to be celebrated when they do come. But look, Donegal, and Armagh will both really fancy their chances heading down there this weekend. I think the absence of Dublin from the last four has just blown the thing wide open. Armagh are in bonus territory in many ways, and there's no pressure on them. They can go and have a real cut at Kerry and see what happens. Donegal, I think Donegal have had a brilliant summer, and I don't think it's necessarily finished yet. There's been a wee sense it's from quite early on in the year that they were going to do something, and now the draw has fallen their way. Galway, just, you know, unbelievable last 20 minutes against Dublin, but it's just how well they can stave off the injuries, and whether Shane Walsh is fully fit, whether they get anything out of Sean Kelly. If you're a betting man on one of the two Ulster teams to come out of it, it would probably be Donegal.
Yeah, listen, the car will be driving itself down to Croke Park automatically by the 28th of July with the frequency that you've been travelling down. Carr, thanks so much for your insights. Thanks for joining us on the programme.
Thanks, Damien.
Carr O'Kane there from the Irish News, reflecting on Mickey Hart's departure from Derry. Who's going to win the Football All-Ireland? Who's going to win the Hurling All-Ireland?
Cork.
Who's going to win the Football All-Ireland?
Donegal.
Yeah.
Jim, I love Jim McGuinness.
Do you?
Jimmy's, I'm a big fan, matches. Yeah. Well, what he's done, like, it's phenomenal, really. And
I think it's going to be quite the close season in terms of managerial movement. I don't think we're going to see a year like it in terms of different managers departing their roles and new people stepping in.
In both codes?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, it's started
Do you know
already,
what it
hasn't
is?
It?
I think the...
Where's Henry going?
Don't know.
Where's Davey going?
Don't know.
It's starting already.
I think...
Will John Kiely stay?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a big difference between the split season and the compressed season. They're two very different things. But I think the nature of the compressed season just makes it even more frenetic for managers.
Yeah,
if you think about it, like, you've no... Can you imagine what the mental strain of being a manager must be like?
You know, I could only imagine, yeah. It's just 24/7.
Yeah, and I think it's even more intense when it's... Instead of running the All-Ireland Championship off from... March to September or March to the end of August,
it's so
we're
going to
run
yeah.
it off. Like, it's mental to think that the 28th of July the whole thing is done and dusted.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a good thing either, Damien, to be
no
honest.
But I just think it just puts that additional strain
on the managers.
The other thing that struck me over the weekend, I was in the car, I was out and about yesterday, and I was listening to Pádraig Lodge and Kyle Coney at the All-Ireland Minor Final, and Pádraig had a stat, I think it was 73 matches to run off the championship, 66 in the provincials and then 7 in the knockouts. And you're thinking to yourself, 73 matches total for lads of that age is an awful lot of football, with training, school, other stuff in life on top of it. But yep. What do I know?
No, but I think that's the case. You could attribute that to...
No, sorry, I know they're not all playing 73 matches, but...
No, look at the soccer at the moment as well, sure. And that's why people are, like, looking at the Euros and criticising some of the top teams and players. But the amount of football that people are playing now, it can't be right.
But look at the rugby.
Like, can't be right.
But sorry, the thing that struck me yesterday, like, I'm a Liverpool fan, as people will know if you listen to the programme, and I follow Liverpool on social media. Like, last Friday,
they're back training.
Liverpool's first team squad went back. 8 of them went back for first year. And then you look at it. Inevitably, some of them will be involved in the Euros final up until the weekend.
Yeah, I don't mind the lads that going back now because they've had their break. It's the lads that are over in Germany playing all through the Euros. They'll probably get 2 weeks and they're straight back into it.
And then you look at the Irish rugby squad, who play the final match of the season next Saturday.
Yeah.
And it'll be probably 54, 55 weeks since they went into pre-season training. Like, they started pre-season for the World Cup sometime in
the
middle
of June.
It's not
right. Like, you know,
anyway, listen.
It's not right.
We'll chat Euros with you shortly. We'll chat rugby with Bernard Jackman towards the tail end of the programme. And we will imminently chat hurling with John Milan and Shane McGrath as we reflect on a brilliant weekend, including Cork ending Limerick's drive for 5 at Croke Park yesterday. I got a feeling.
Nice little turn by Shane Barrett. Barrett goes along the sideline, hand passing it into the centre. Limerick are exposed. There's an opportunity. Under 13, the shot, back of the net. It's an incredible goal for Cork. Incredible. Brian Hayes hits the back of Nicky Craig's net with an absolute rasper. He scored 1-1 against Offaly. This is his second goal in the championship. Nicky Craig, brilliant goalkeeper, is beaten at the Davin end. And Cork are 1-7. Limerick 6 points. David Reedy. Reedy gets it. Lays it off. Aaron Gillan. Here comes the shot. Oh, Patrick Collins. Heroic. Gillan again. Trying to take a shot. Gives it to Flanagan. Referee has blown his whistle. Let's kick it. Seamus Flanagan. Gilligan. What the name of God is he doing back there? He's playing in left half back. He gives it over towards Aaron Gillan. Comes out behind the Cork players on the edge of the D. Scoops it forward towards Garone Hegarty. Here's Big Garone. Here comes a shot. Collins saves. Gillan is there. Cork are on the line. Gillan is on the ground. Stalemate. Who has the slither? Cork have it. Referee Tyler wants it to go. This is unbelievable. Here comes Declan Dalton. Inside his own 65. Lets it fly. Lets it rip. And he sends it over the bar. Unbelievable. A brilliant save at the old one end and the Davin end. Declan Dalton. I got a feeling. Wonderful catch by Robert Downey. Scored a great point. Turning on is Mark Coleman. Coleman from Blarney. The first man from his club to represent Cork at county level. Ball into Seamus Harnedy. Gives himself a bit of an angle and hits it way, way down. East Cork, Imo Kelly, you name it. Harnedy has the magic. And Cork are leading by 124 to Limerick's 20 points. 7 points between them. Ball is dropping down. Bobby O'Flynn underneath it. Shane Barrett has it in front of the Hogan stand, running along the sideline, heading towards the 20-metre line. He's going to go for the score because there's no other options. My word, comes back up the post. A chance for Patrick Horgan. A fantastic save by Nicky Crane. Outside the, inside the large rectangle. The ball is being, this first time we've seen a bit of ground. It's ecstatic, it's frantic, it's crazy. And Limerick are coming away. And the ball comes out to Patrick Collins. And the referee is looking at his watch. The Cork are going to make the All-Ireland final, are they? This is incredible. Cork lay it down. Tyler Walsh goes the wild high whistle. And Limerick are beaten. The five in a row dream is over. Cork are in the All-Ireland final.
That's Marty Morrissey from RTÉ Radio 1 yesterday afternoon, and if you're slightly concerned, I can assure you they have peeled him off the ceiling of Croke Park. I spoke to him yesterday evening and he's returned to some semblance of normality, as has been the case on so many Mondays. John Milan and Shane McGrath are with us. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Well, Demo.
Good evening.
Lads, it's very difficult to know where to start with the weekend that we have seen. Shane, maybe Cork and Clare justifiably are getting the headlines, but I think I personally feel it's really important to Mark Limerick and just the brilliant champions that they have been and what they have done for the game in recent years. And people lining up today to write Limerick's obituary, I think, is probably slightly premature.
Ah, come here, Damien. I think people who know their hurling aren't writing any obituary for Limerick. I think that, like, if you think about it, they were two wides away from taking the game to extra time. Like, you know, as good as Cork performance was, and it was, the heroic performance all over the field, Limerick were just not aren't at the normal pitch that we normally associate them with being in Croke Park. Barry Nash missing was a big thing, but I mean, Cork tactically got it set up. So, like, what this comes down to is, like, that Cork had to be 10 points better performance-wise to win by two. If that makes sense. Like, you know, Shane O'Brien's wide and Aidan O'Connor's wide. Normally those two guys at club level, at intercounty level, they're nailing those ones. You know, I think Shane's one even in particular, he was a bit closer to the goals and stuff, and he was after nailing 2 points as well. So I don't think anybody's writing an obituary. I think this group will be back again and very, very soon. The thing that a lot of people are wondering, Damien, is who'll be at the helm of it. Like, will it, it's for me, for them to kind of really, you know, drive on and even do what Kilkenny did after, you know, they didn't get the 5 in a row done. They bounced back the following year. The bet was in an All-Ireland final, but they freshened the thing up with new players. Limerick will probably need to do that. Realistically, you know, they need to have Adam English probably starting now, need to have Shane O'Brien starting, need to maybe one or two extra new guys into the panel. And They need John Kiely and Paul Kinnock there to guide it all. And I think that'll be key to the whole thing for the bounce back for him. So anyone writing their obituary really doesn't have a clue about hurling.
John, when we talk about Cork, had you spoken to somebody after they walked out of Walsh Park, having been beaten by 3 points by Waterford and then having been beaten by 2 points by Clare a week later, leaving Páirc Uí Chaoimh? I don't think too many Cork fans would have expected an All-Ireland final appearance. Where has the turnaround in form come from?
Hence the reason why they've already odds 50-1 to win the All Ireland. It's unbelievable, really. You know, when you think back of, you know, when Waterford played Tipperary in Welsh Park, I'll bring you back. Waterford 71 minutes on the clock. Waterford were 4 points up, going into injury time. Tipperary pulled back a point, got it back to a goal, and I can still visually see, you know, the Tipperary player going down the sideline and Waterford player not taking out the Tipperary lad, the ball getting passed in around the edge of the square, and the ball getting flicked to the back of the net, and all of a sudden Cork are back in the championship. And you know, that was the first lifeline. The second lifeline then was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh when they played Limerick. They got a third lifeline then up in Ennis, you know, with that miss six with the 65. So they've got three lifelines, and you just wonder, are the stars aligned that Cork's name is on the trophy? But you know, going back to it, I suppose, look, they probably would have got, you know, a bit of energy out of somewhere, you know, off the back of that Waterford Tipperary result. And I suppose, look, they changed up their made wholesale changes after that Waterford defeat. You know, they were extremely unlucky against Clare with Sean O'Donoghue was sent off. And you know, they came with an unbelievable performance to stay in the championship, and it took that Patrick Horgan wonder penalty to keep him in the championship. And you know, they're relying on other results. We do know now as well that they had sickness in their camp. You know, the last two games against Offaly in Dublin, but yesterday they were back to themselves. Mm. And you know, they had to bring it yesterday. They had to bring the thunder. They had to bring that manic aggression. They brought that, but they brought the hurling with them, and they brought that speed, the skill that we were so accustomed to seeing with Cork over the years, the really good Cork teams. And yeah, they were full value for their win yesterday. And you know, the levels that they brought yesterday were just incredible. And they had to, those were the levels that they had to bring to down this incredible Limerick side. Because you know, you look at Limerick still registered 29 points, and Limerick always have that target of 30 points. 30. And you know, Limerick always believe that they can hit that 30 point mark, that should be good enough to get them over the line. But Cork went 1 point better; they hit 128 and not that 31 point mark.
Are Cork your favourites now, John, when you consider what they've had to go through to get here?
I think Cork are going to get a big bounce off of yesterday's game. But the big question for Cork now is, can they go and bring those levels again? Because you know what they brought yesterday, you know, it's going to be a big ask. But you know, they're on a high, they're on a roll, you know. And when Cork get on a roll, they're extremely difficult to beat. But on the flip side of that, you know, I look at Clare. I think Clare are going to get an enormous bounce off of that second half performance. Mm. And it's extremely difficult to call.
Yeah.
I think it's very much nearly a 55-45 game, probably slightly leaning towards Cork. And I think it's look, All-Ireland final day, it brings on a life of its own, but it's most certainly going to be All-Ireland day, you know.
Shane, when we talk about the psychology of it and when the teams reconvene, like I know Clare are doing their media night tomorrow night. Brian Lohan, to speak to him straight after the final for the radio on Saturday, was talking about the need for players to do the tickets and get all that kind of rubbish out of the way very, very quickly. But when it comes down to him doing the video analysis, if they've not done it already, he's got the perfect storm, because by his own admission, he could have taken off half that team on Saturday afternoon at half time. So the message that he will be delivering, no doubt, is we're in an All-Ireland final, but we took too long to really land our first punch against Kilkenny on Saturday.
Yeah, that's it. And most Clare people would have been absolutely furious at halftime, because I mean, like, the hurt they would have felt, well, they should have felt, from losing three Munster finals. They were going up and it was looking like they were going to lose three All-Ireland semi-finals, both to the same teams. Like, and like, you're talking about motivating factors, like, you know, you're talking about lads maybe careers, like, you know, as in coming to a close if they don't get it done yesterday, you know, players and management. And like, I'd say what had to be said, Damo, to be honest, like, was probably said by maybe one or two people, because it was the same message that had to come and says, look, like, I can't, what is the story? Like, what, you know, what was that like? You know, what was that performance there like? You know, and Brian Lohan would have said maybe one or two things, maybe the likes of Tony Kelly, the likes of John Conlon, David McInerney, these guys probably stood up and said, lads, this is it now, now or never. And it was now or never. And you know what? In fairness to them, they stood up. They stood up and they answered the questions. And even last year, like, when Kilkenny got the goal last year against the run of play, you know, it was Kilkenny kind of drove on and you know, they got the job done, albeit an unbelievable save from Owen Murphy. Whereas on Saturday, when Kilkenny got the goal, it was it was the jolt that Clare needed to really come into life. And while lads, by their very, very own high standards, e.g. Tony Kelly, were quiet, they still roared into it there, you know, scoring a couple of points, a couple of assists. David McInerney, outstanding. Shane O'Donnell really came into it. Aidan McCarthy, nailing frees. Quilligan in the goals, you know, he'd have a lot of critics, Damien. He'd have a lot of critics in Clare, like, you know what I mean, to say that, you know, is he good enough? Is he the best goalie we have? And he really answered all those questions and more. So what had to be said was said, but they delivered. Like, that's the main thing. They delivered within a performance, and they're now in an All-Ireland final. And you know what? Everybody, and I was up there yesterday, everybody was only talking about one team in an All-Ireland final, and that was Cork. So I think Clare are going to come into it in a great place. Cork will be favourites, but Clare are going to come in, you know, not really knowing what maybe even their best 15 is going to be to start, e.g. okay. Ryan Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not, like, you know, I want to talk to you about the goalkeepers in a minute, but before I do, John, how big a challenge does Derek Ling face in lifting those Kilkenny players? Because they have to be wondering, how in the name of all that is sacred are we not heading to an All-Ireland final in 2 weeks' time?
Yeah, I agree. But look, they've been here before. I suppose, look, you go back to the COVID semi-final against Waterford. In that semi-final, something similar played out. Waterford, they should have been out of sight in that semi-final. They didn't put Waterford away that day. And, you know, Waterford tacked on a couple of scores early in that second half. And something similar again on Saturday, you know, they left Clare in the game, and that game should have been well over at half time. And, you know, Clare found energy from somewhere, whatever Lone said to him at half time. And look, you got to give great credit to Brian Lone. It was, you know, there was a couple of ballsy calls there to be made. He kept Kelly on the field, he kept Peter Duggan on the field, and they rewarded him in the end. And, you know, the impact off the bench. But from a Kilkenny point of view, most certainly, they will be scratching their heads saying, you know, why didn't we, you know, get the scores that we could have gotten to put Clare out of sight. And, you know, if they would have gotten those scores, you know, and if instead of it being 5 points up at half time, they could have very easily been 10, 11 points up, and it would have been very, very difficult to Clare come back. But look, That's just the way of hurling is, you know. That's the beauty about this game. That's why we love it so much. And I just think, look, overall, Damien, I just think even yesterday, Saturday, it just makes you immensely proud to be Irish and to be a part of this association. And, you know, for the entertainment that was given over the course of the weekend, and then particularly yesterday, it was just fantastic to see. And, you know, the one most pleasing thing for me is that the whole nation got to witness that yesterday, and it has everybody talking today, and I think it'll have everybody talking for the rest of the week and leading into next week's final as well, you know.
Just before I let you both go, and Shane, you jump in on this first, is that the big question from the weekend, which of the four of them is going to be the all-star goalkeeper? Because the goalkeeping performances in, like, I know people focus on the saves, but the distribution, the role of the goalkeeper in the modern game was just highlighted again yesterday and across the weekend. And who in their right mind would actively choose to put themselves in that position with the hardship that they have to endure?
Yeah, well, Damien, as I was saying yesterday, I'm actually in a place that I can talk about this because I'm actually currently playing in goals in the North Junior A Hurling.
Is that because nobody else would go in?
That's because nobody else. My brother was in goals last year, he doesn't want to go in goals this year, and I'm overage throughout the field now, I think. So there you go. So I know it can be a lonely place. But look, the saves were unbelievable. But I think the saves kind of get maybe lost, or the saves are the main thing we look at with a goalie. But like, what a goalie's distribution now is key to a team's success. And we look at Nicky Quaid and what he does with that ball in his hand. We look at Owen Murphy, what he does. We look at Patrick Collins and Abel Quilligan, four top-class strikers of the ball. But being a top-class striker of the ball is one thing. A lot of lads lump the ball down now with the hurlies and with the physical strength they have. They'll hit the far 45. It's being able to ping a ball one bounce into a lad's hand who's running from 20, 30 yards at a diagonal into the space that's left. And Patrick Collins gave an absolute exhibition of that yesterday, of being able to hit the likes of Darragh Fitzgibbon with space that was left. You know, they took Kyle Hayes out of the game, but he had to look up and see that and make that decision, as did Avery Quilligan have to do it as well, the way his distribution was as well. Obviously, we know what Nicky Quaid has been doing and has done for so long, and obviously Owen Murphy. So look, who will be the all-star goalie at the moment? It'll probably come down to who has the better final now. And agree or disagree with that, with what Owen Murphy has saves he has made and what Nicky Quaid has done throughout this year, but it probably will come down to who has the better final between Quilligan and Patrick Collins. But look, top class goalies, saves, yeah, we all see the saves, but it's their distribution is what's key for their teams being victorious.
Alan Colley,
I think the Kilkenny keeper is the best of them all, but the four of them are brilliant. But looking at it yesterday and even on Saturday, just to echo what John is saying as well, and I'm a soccer man, but I absolutely love the hurling, and to be in there Saturday, what they served up yesterday, and when you consider as well, Damien, where football is at the moment and how dire the football is and what hurling is delivering for the last 2, 3, 4 years, it's absolutely phenomenal. And I actually don't think they're doing the service to hurling that they should be doing the GAA, because even in the build up to those games all last week, there wasn't a word about them, and yet when you think of what they served up yesterday, it was absolutely phenomenal on Saturday, and it'll be the same in the final in 2 weeks.
Lads, I'm miles over on time, so I'm going to leave it there. John Milan, Shane McGrath, we'll chat plenty no doubt between now and the final rolling round. Thanks so much for being with us as always.
Thanks, lads, to come
no doubt between now and the final. We're going to chat more soccer with Alan after the break. Stay with us.
Game on.
Football.
So the final four are left standing in Euro 2024. The first of the semi-finals taking place tomorrow evening, Spain against France, and then on Wednesday it is England against Netherlands. Dare I suggest, Alan Colley, that tomorrow night is the de facto final?
I don't think so, Damien. I think the four of them now, because of what we've seen so far in the competition, I think it's wide open. And I would just slightly shade towards the Spanish so far in terms of what they've served up. I think they've been really good. But if you go through England, France and the Netherlands, it's much of a muchness in what they've delivered so far. The only ones, and I've been saying this for weeks during the tournament to pals and stuff, there's been no standout team. The only one that have basically, I suppose, played to their level so far has been Spain.
Even talking to Betta about this beforehand, you have a situation normally where these tournaments are kind of standalone, yeah, and you maybe savour them more, or they get more time in the spotlight, whereas this year it feels like there's so much going on that you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul in terms of your attention. So is this a poorer tournament, or are we just more romantic about the ones that have gone on in the past?
No, I think this is a poorer tournament, but I think there's factors for it, and we touched on it earlier in terms of the amount of football that teams and players are playing. And I also think, Damien, that no one really has mentioned this, but if you actually look at the managers of these teams compared to the managers that we see at club level week in, week out, it's night and day. There is no top manager managing a country. No top manager. Would Gareth Southgate, Roberto Martinez, Ronald Koeman or De La Fuentes get a job with any of the top teams?
Well, you look at where they've come from previously and you'd be inclined to say no.
Well, there you go. So people are critical of these managers not being able to get the best out of these brilliant players and brilliant teams, but they're not brilliant managers.
Whereas if you look at it, maybe like Julian Nagelsmann's probably the one who has managed a big club.
Yeah, and I actually think he did a really good job with Germany. They were just caught out in extra time.
I feel like... Obviously, we consume the English media and we're bombarded with everything else. Like, you feel for England, some of the players, if it goes wrong. Like, Southgate, what he went through after Euro 96 is going to be in the halfpenny place compared to what he's going to go through here if they don't win this.
Well,
he's been ridiculed.
Well, he's hanging off a cliff.
Yeah, but did he stumble...
what they've served up so far.
Did he stumble upon their best formation the other night? And even, okay, you can look at it. You're playing like Bukayo Saka as your left wing back because you've brought...
Well, he played right wing.
Well, sorry, but you're switching them back and forth. But like you know, he's your second choice in that position because the fella you brought to be your first choice hasn't played football in whatever number of months, and you can't quite trust his fitness. Like it's
actually working out for him now because Shaw came on obviously for 10-15 minutes, and I actually think there might be a chance he may start now. Being as conservative as Southgate is, and he loves Kieran Trippier and he's very loyal, I think he'll probably stick with Trippier at left wing back, but he did get a knock towards the end of the game, so it'll be interesting to see if he's fit enough. I think he'll start him, but Shaw's ready to go now.
So Spain to beat France tomorrow night,
Spain to beat France,
Netherlands England Wednesday.
I don't know, Damien, this is tough to call.
Sure, you have to call it. That's why I'm asking the hard questions, Alan. That's why you're here. Answer the question.
I was emphatic
about
Spain.
I'll go full Vincent Brown on you now.
I was emphatic about Spain, but I think this one is harder to call, and I'd be edging towards the Netherlands. England can't keep getting away with it.
Okay, so Spain Netherlands in the final then, 8 o'clock Spain. Saturday evening live on RT2 television.
Sunday. Spain to win. I think Spain, if there's any justice in the footballing world, Spain will win it for what they've delivered so far.
Of far greater importance for a lot of people tomorrow night, Shamrock Rovers away to Viking or Reykjavik in the Champions League. And when you look at the work that they've done in the last couple of years and emulating the great team of the 80s to win a four in a row, let's be very honest, the five in a row is probably beyond them at this stage. But making a breakthrough in Europe is so important to Stephen Bradley and to the club for financial reasons, for matters of prestige. Like, the wheels fell off the wagon last year. Are they better prepared for it this year?
Well, on the evidence we've seen in the league, and you mentioned there that they're the fifth title is well beyond them, I don't think they are well prepared for it at all, because they've really struggled throughout the whole season, Damien. And I suppose, despite all the plaudits that Bradley has got for those four league titles, and deservedly so, and they've been the best team for the last 4 years, they've never done it in Europe under him. And it's I think there's pressure on him going into that. This was the year that they were all saying they will focus a little bit more on Europe, because for the reasons you outlined in terms of the prestige and obviously the financial reward that it brings as well, and just to try and make a breakthrough, because they were the best team domestically. But I can't see it happening, just purely based on what we've seen in the league. They've been so inconsistent.
Derry away to Bruno's Magpies on Thursday. Shells at home to St. Joseph's. If you're Damien Duff, how do you approach Europe in light of the fact that you're the front runner for the league this year?
Yeah, I think in Duff's situation, they're coming into this so confident. And what's in his favour is the league is parked for a month now, so he can concentrate on the couple of games. Their next league game is not for 4 weeks. They have the cup game coming in between the couple of European games, and if they were to go through, obviously against the team on Thursday night from Gibraltar, they're playing FC Zurich, I think, in the next round, with the league parked for at least 3 or 4 weeks. So he can concentrate fully on those games, embrace them. There'll be a massive crowd in Talca Park. There was obviously huge hype around the fact that they qualified again, and I watched them last Thursday night. They'll certainly need an improvement on what they served up against Drogheda the other night. It was probably the poorest I've seen them all season, but they're in such a strong place and a strong position, not only on the pitch, off the pitch as well, because he brought in 3 or 4 new players in the window there,
and big players,
and have strengthened the squad. Yeah. All of a sudden they have a squad. They didn't have that 3 weeks ago. Now they have a squad.
3 points clear with a game in hand on Derry. Shells have 12 games left to play. Like, you are in that. Like, and you've been part of league winning teams. You are getting close to that point where you put a magical number up on a whiteboard and just cut 3 points off it as you go along. Like, you know, in terms of how many points you need to get over the line.
Well, 12 games. Like, we're at the business end now. We really are.
And it's still a third of the season.
Now, what will help them as well, it's spread out over, I think, 3 months. So it's not like 12 games in 12 weeks consecutively. It's spread out over 3 months. They obviously have the distractions. I think they're good distractions of Europe and the Cup now to have a squad to cater for that. But they're in such an unbelievable position. And he's been brilliant. Duff has been absolutely brilliant. I'm a huge fan. I was a huge fan as a player. I think what he's brought to the league, what he's done at Shelburne as well, has been absolutely monumental. And I hope to win Thursday night and get through in Europe. And I actually hope to win the league now.
Okay.
I'd love to see them go on and win the league.
Your former club.
I would love to see them win the league, yeah.
Okay, much more still to come in the programme. We're going to chat rugby with Bernard Jackman after the break. Stay with us.
Game on. Rugby.
And it's rugby to finish the programme this Monday. Bernard Jackman is with us. Bernard, how are you? Oh, sorry, hang on. Wrong button. How are you?
Yeah, very good.
Have you loud and clear? I'm only 15 good. Years doing this now. You think I'd know which button to press at this stage? Ireland 27-20 defeat to South Africa on Saturday. Let's be very honest. Could we have wished for anything other than that?
No, I thought it was always going to be a very difficult game for Ireland, given obviously how the province has finished, how tired we looked, our internationals looked. But in fairness, they actually found a performance that was full of energy. And given that Andre Pollard missed 3 pretty kickable kicks at goal, and you know, obviously we had the James Lowe try disallowed, and a few other little moments in the game that were key. Actually, I think they'll feel they could have won it if they're a little bit more accurate. And I think they'll be very frustrated. I think Andy Farrell was frustrated afterwards with Ireland's performance, because as I said, they got the energy, but they didn't get the accuracy, which has been a big part of Ireland's success over the last couple of years.
But the problem now is it looks like it has come at a fairly significant cost. Yeah. Dan Sheehan, the suggestion is, has suffered a torn anterior cruciate ligament. We obviously saw Craig Casey. It was quite a distressing scene to see the situation he was in. He was up and about afterwards. But, you know, again, listen, these games have to be played, and we can't expect South Africa, New Zealand and Australia to come to the Aviva in November if we're not willing to go there in June. But, like, you look at these are guys who went into pre-season on the 19th of June last year, and they're going to finish their season this Saturday. Like, it begs a question about the strain that we are putting on the elite players across the world and across the global game.
Yeah, 100%. And look, at unfortunately, rugby is crying out for revenue and funding. So it's unlikely we're going to get less games. But the World Cup year in particular, I think there has to be an argument for potentially a summer off. You'd nearly be better off travelling to play an extra test match, you know, the following summer, over the following two summers, and actually have that little bit of a break. I know we need them to come back to us in November, and that's the cash cow that drives the whole game. But certainly, look, at you have to credit the players. They put in a phenomenal effort, but it is a big task. And you see some of the injuries that were shipped, like to lose Dan Sheen for, you know, what could probably be most of the season. It's a Lions season, and you know, he would be there very much in the running. And the physicality of the game, you know, we talk about the game being more physical, but Ireland had to put their bodies on the line over and over again. And when you're doing that against a team who are bigger and more powerful than you, which South Africans are, and particularly the bench that they bring on, it's always going to increase the risk of injury. So yeah, I think that's the big thing for Fire this week, is how bad are obviously, we know that Dan is out, we know Craig Casey won't play, but apparently there's four or five others who are, you know, touch and go to play as well.
So in many ways your hands are tied, in terms of, it's not a case of asking how will Andy Farrell approach this, it's a case of asking how may he be forced to approach this. So there will be changes.
Yeah, there will be some changes. And also, like, it is an opportunity. I mean, there's players going down there who potentially wouldn't have got game time, bar those injuries. And that's tough. Farrell is a very good manager at keeping everybody happy, everyone feeling part of it. So there may be a temptation to make some change for the second week. But I actually think he'll smell blood. And I think he'll think, you know, down at sea level, the matches in Durban, if Ireland can get their attacking game going, you know, earlier. I mean, that was the most bizarre thing, was that we never really looked comfortable in an attacking point of view. And it was actually South Africa who were asking questions of us out wide, which is a big shift for them. But when we did at the end, you know, we saw the Ryan Baird try, we saw the Conor Murray try, and we actually opened up a few holes. And he'll probably say, well, look, if we can do that from a bit earlier, we have a chance of winning this. But the big challenge is going to be Damien getting the bench. I mean, they brought on six forwards, and we saw the penalty try. We don't have that luxury at the moment in terms of subs.
Yeah, and listen, for all that we can talk about the length of the season and everything else, there's a group of 30-odd players in camp this week who will want to have their final memory of this season, a victory over the world champions.
Yeah, and look at it. They will genuinely feel probably more confident that they can get a win, because they've taken and faced the best the box can bring, and to face that backlash, that emotional charge of being back in Loftus, the first home game since they won the World Cup. They didn't get to do that in 2019 because of COVID. And there was a huge emotion around the South African performance. That's not going to be the same in Durban. And Ireland, potentially, if they can refine some parts of their game, will have to believe that they can potentially get a scalp. But if this series was drawn 1-1, that would be a phenomenal result for Andy Farrell.
To finish, listen, we talk about the game needing the revenue of these tours and everything else, but I got into the car leaving Croke Park on Saturday, and I was listening to Michael Corcoran and James Downey, and for a minute I thought they were after landing in Coppers to do the match from Coppers because of this contrived atmosphere. And listen, there has to be, like, for me it's an abomination. I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old and cranky in my increasing years.
Yeah, look at it, I don't think you needed that to sell out Loftus for Ireland and South Africa, you know, and that's the problem. And how far are we trying to push entertainment? Like, there's a lot of core fans absolutely hate us, you know.
I don't know, Alan, did you hear this?
Like, no.
It's like being in manumission in Ibiza for every break and play, with like Coldplay and different things pumping over the tannoy. But obviously that's the way they do things, Bernard, and I just need to get with it.
Yeah, I don't know if you do. I think, as I said, it's crazy. We're 20 whatever years into professional rugby, and we're still trying to refine the product, and and not just the product. For me, I'm a bit of a in any sport, I'm more interested in what's happening between the four lines.
You're a cranky owlad like me. Yeah,
I am. Yeah, well, look, yeah, there's a lot of people who want to go to be entertained, and the entertainment is what happens pre-post and during the match in terms of music, etc. But yeah,
listen, they're not real sports people.
But sure, listen,
they want to
be
entertained before the match and after the match. What's the point of going to the match?
It's not that. It's like Craig Casey down injured, and you've Coldplay blasting in
the
background.
Something different.
But and listen, before people queue up and start texting in to tell me I am a cranky middle-aged man, they've done it in the Aviva, and it didn't work in the Aviva, and it hasn't worked anywhere else. Listen, anyway. The game of rugby needs to be more fluid and not have so many breaks in play that people need to be entertained. Mm. Anyway, lads, we're not going to solve that now. Bernard, thanks for your time. As always,
thanks,
Bernard Jackman has been with us there. Alan, thank you very much
for your company
over the course of the hour. Laura Lee Davies was our broadcast coordinator. Barry O'Neill produced the programme. Rachel May Hannon is on the way. Jenny's here after nine. From Damien O'Mara, we chat again. Good night. RTE 2FM.